You know, this is one of those topics that no one really wants to think about, but if you're a parent, a homeowner, married, or helping take care of aging parents, it's something that honestly deserves a little attention. I'm talking about estate planning. And before you tune out thinking it's complicated or expensive, that's actually why I want to mention trust and will. Trust and will makes estate planning feel way less intimidating than it sounds. They offer modern, attorney-designed wills and trusts that you can create online. And the process is surprisingly straightforward. In fact, you can create a will in as little as 30 minutes. That includes things like guardianship for your kids or pets, how your assets are distributed, and even healthcare directives. Don't wait until it's too late. Protect your loved ones with Trust and Will, the most trusted name in online estate planning. Go to trustandwill.com/future to get 20% off. That's trustandwill.com/future for 20% off. trustandwill.com/future.
The Claire Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Later this hour, we're going to talk about the true cost of renovating your home to make it eco-friendly. We'll also be highlighting some of the great seafood that Ireland has to offer with three eminent producers from right across the country. You can WhatsApp us this morning. The number is 087 1400 106 or email clarebyrne@newstalk.com. I'm joined now in the studio by the leader of Sinn Féin and TD for Dublin Central, Mary Lou MacDonald. Good morning
to
you.
Good morning, Claire.
You're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
I'm going to start with what's on the front page of one of the newspapers this morning. This is the Mail. It's about hair coursing because the People Before Profit have a hair coursing bill coming this week aimed at banning it, and you aren't supporting it. Why is that?
Because our position is to support strict regulation rather than a ban. And I should say, I saw that story this morning and I was at a little bit of a loss around it, to be honest with you. Well, because just to reassure your listeners, we are not obsessed with fox hunting or hair coursing. These are issues that have to be dealt with, but they are by no means to the foreground of Sinn Féin's political programme or our priorities or our concerns. We took a decision at our recent Ardesh in support of a ban on fox hunting, but it was clear that it was a decision on that issue. As regards hair coursing, we support regulation. We are aware that these are sensitive issues for some. They have to be properly invigilated, regulated, but we won't be supporting a ban. Right. I think those proposing the ban need to consider, if that happens, what are the consequences of it, including unintended consequences of perhaps driving some of this underground and beyond regulation, which I think would be a really bad outcome.
Because one of your councillors says in this voice note doing the rounds that the Mail say that they've heard that you gave him a positive response when he said there would be an attempt to reverse the party's support for the ban.
Well,
on
no, and that's why I'm saying I'm at a loss with this. I literally saw
that's
it
not
on the
your
front,
position.
But not at all. No, yeah.
The reason why people think this is important is because it's about your positioning on the political spectrum. For some people, they say if you're aligned with the left, you would not be in favour of hair coursing. You would not be in favour of fox hunting.
Look, Claire, politics of the left is about equality. It's about standing up for working people. It's about ensuring that people have food in their belly, a roof over their head, decent work, decent wages. It's about ensuring that people have the opportunities that they're entitled to in an open and fair democratic society. And within politics of the left, you will have a variety of experiences, exposures and ideas on all manner of things, including these issues around rural pursuits. It's not a quintessential issue that decides your politics or typifies the politics of whether you are on the right or the left. We're Irish Republicans. We're the party of Irish reunification, which I hope we'll
get to chat about. But just on the hair coursing, like, we're one of only three EU countries that allows hair coursing. And it seems like a bizarre thing to support hair coursing. Like, what have you got against hairs?
But nothing at all, nothing at all at all. And it's not about supporting hair coursing. What's been asked here is, do you support a ban on this practice, yes or no? I'm conscious, so far as I know, the big hair coursing meet in this jurisdiction happens in Clonmel annually. It attracts a huge crowd of people. And my query is, if there were to be a ban, what happens next. I think we are better. This is my view. We are better to have strict regulation. I would like to see a move from...
So have hairs
saying,
terrified and ripped apart legally rather than illegally?
Well, they're not. The dogs are now muzzled, so no animal is ripped apart.
But they're terrified and they turn direction through fear.
I would certainly personally have a strong view that we move to something like lure coursing, in which a mechanical hare is used rather than a live one. And I think all of those things need to be explored. But Sinn Féin does not support an outright ban.
Okay, and you're 8 years in the job now.
I am.
And the expectation was that Sinn Féin would do it in general election 2024. Are you tired of being in opposition?
I want us to be in government, for sure. I'm conscious that 2020 was very much a game-changing election, not just for Sinn Féin.
Well, that was the year when it was said afterwards that Sinn Féin left seats behind you.
The point that I wish to make is that it was a game-changing election, not just for our party, but for the whole Irish political system, in that we moved from a position where you had two large parties and the rest into a fundamental realignment. And of course, I wanted us to succeed and enter government in 2024. That wasn't to be. But what was confirmed in 2024 is that fundamental change in the Irish political landscape wasn't a flash in the pan. It wasn't a blip. It wasn't an accident. That it was and remains a permanent feature of the political system.
It feels as though, and the polls tell us and the recent by-elections tell us, that you're in a sort of a stagnant place right now. Nothing really happening.
Just remember, it's 6 years ago, prior to that landmark election, Sinn Féin would have been regarded as a small party that kind of ebbed and flowed. We've changed that. I would submit that we have fundamentally now entered a challenge to the Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, forever in government, them and only them model of Irish politics. I think that's hugely significant.
Mm. But the growth at the moment and in politics is with the Sock Dems, isn't it? The momentum isn't with Sinn Féin.
Well, look, we are mid-cycle. You know, politics is a game where you have to have longevity. You have to have a long-headed view. You have to have resilience. You have to have stamina. And you have your surge. You have your surge and you have your ebb and your flow. It's the nature. It's not unlike sports. It's not unlike, dare I say it, a soccer match or a hurling match in that regard. And you have to be fit to actually deal with, cope with, and in my case as the leader, to lead through all of those passages of play. We are very strong. We've 39 TDs, we've 6 Seán Éireadh, we have a crew north of the border, we're in the executive, in the assembly, we're a national organisation, Claire, and our next electoral challenge is actually north of the border when we face into assembly elections next summer. So what are we going to do? What am I going to do? We're going to get up every day, work very, very hard and hope that we can continue to instill a level of hope in Irish people, especially younger people in our country, that we can actually make things better and that they can have their future here. But this is sports is our politics is competitive and it's not for people who are not prepared to actually see it through the great days and the tough days.
But
we're in good shape. I am satisfied that we are in good shape.
I met you in the RDS in 2019. Do you remember back to the European elections at the time? It wasn't a good day for Sinn Féin on that day. And you had good days since.
Yeah.
But you were saying what you've just said there, you were saying to me then.
Yeah.
So it just feels like it's 2 steps forward, 1 step back, and you're actually not making any progress.
But we have made enormous progress, Claire. Since that conversation I had with you in 2019, Sinn Féin is now one of 3 medium-sized parties. Don't miss how significant this is. Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have histories of government and strength in this state going back a century and more. They were the natural and, in fact, the only parties of government. You now have a third contender in our party, a party that's organised nationally, that has a huge national project in our sights. And people will have at the next election an opportunity to elect, I believe, government beyond Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Mm. You mentioned the by-election. The really significant thing, I think, arising from the Dublin Central by-election is that for the first time, there is neither a Fianna Fáil nor a Fine Gael TD in that constituency. Don't miss all of those straws in the wind, because they mark real generational change in terms of the political system, the political options, and I hope consequentially the options for government that will present to people at the next general election.
As a party leader, of course it would be expected that you would bring somebody in Dublin Central. How difficult was that for you that didn't happen?
Well, look, by-elections are a peculiarity of our system. The first count tally was a closely run thing. I mean, I think our candidate, Janice Boylan, performed very, very well. We ran a very good campaign. But at the end of the day, by-elections are decided by transfers. And I don't think anybody listening to this programme would be terribly surprised that Fine Gael voters are not going to transfer to Sinn Féin. And it was ultimately those votes that decided the contest. And can I congratulate the winner of that? You have to be gracious in politics as well. Congratulations to Danny Lennis for winning the seat fair and square. But I wouldn't read too much beyond the context of that particular contest.
Are you concerned about the Social Democrats? I mean, Holly Kearns has said that you need to get your position straight on certain matters before they can make their minds up about whether you're left or not. They're on the up. Do you think that they might be an electoral threat to Sinn Féin?
Can I just say that it's really not for anybody to become the arbiter or the judge as to whether or not somebody is on the right or the left or otherwise. The content of your politics is reflected in the things that you prioritise. We prioritise working people. We represent working people, working families.
But ultimately, you're going to have to decide whether you can do business with these people.
Of course.
And they've got to make that judgment call about you as well.
But Claire, I would equally say that in this stall, we have been marked by the fact that we all have worked together, I think most notably in the campaign to elect Catherine Connolly as our Uachtaráin. But beyond that, the whole debacle around Michael Lowry, if you recall, and the manoeuvre for a government to try and dominate the government benches and also the opposition benches. We called them out very effectively on that. We've had success in respect of the SNAs and attempts to cut those numbers. So I think there's actually been concrete evidence of where we've worked together. But we are not the same parties. That would be a mistake. There was never any pretense.
And the electoral threat from the Social Democrats?
Look, politics is competitive. We have to stand our ground, set out our stall and go out and win every single vote that we can. But we are distinct parties with slightly different voter bases if you look at the data. And for us to create an alternative government to Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, we need everybody to do well. I want to lead Sinn Féin to the strongest electoral result that we have ever had in the next general election. But it is not a bad thing for us either to see others beyond Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael achieving well on their own terms as well. So it's not a zero-sum game.
You still want the job. You want to lead Sinn Féin into the next general election. Because I had Piers Doherty in here and I asked him, did he have leadership ambition? He said that he didn't. And he was pretty convincing on that. But do you think that he could lead Sinn Féin at some point in the future?
Well, look, there isn't a vacancy for the job now. I'm happy to report I got re-elected as leader at our Ordesh. And in the future, whenever that might be, when that does become a question, well, then I guess everybody will have to survey the scene at that point, see who would be available. And then ultimately people make their own decisions. This job, I have to tell you, would not be for everyone. It's quite the job. It's distinct from, I suppose, leaders of other political parties in that we are a national organisation. It's a huge organisation. It's complicated because you're in the Oireachtas. You're obviously in local government, but you're also in the Assembly, the Executive. We have elected MPs, but we're abstentionists.
That's why I said to you, you're 8 years in the job. Yeah. It's a long time in a tough gig.
Well, I'm a tough doll, you know, so I'm well fit for it, Claire. And I enjoy the work. I mean, for me, it's a tremendous privilege, of course, to lead. And I am very lucky that we have a collective leadership. I have an incredible partner in Michelle O'Neill, mm-hmm. but equally in others like Piers Doherty and Conor Murphy and others. So we really work on a collegiate and a collective basis.
Listen, our listeners are messaging us, as you would expect. Mary Lou needs to keep an eye on the cost of living. Sinn Féin have achieved nothing in opposition. A United Ireland is not the thing that keeps me awake at night. Now, we will speak about your United Ireland private member's bill. But on the cost of living, like, you put the government under huge pressure to extend that fuel package. That's going to cost us a billion or thereabouts. Why shout so loudly for something to be carried on through to September that is so untargeted and is costing so much?
We also put them under huge pressure as regards the cost of energy. We're paying the highest rates, as you know, for our electricity in Europe. And meanwhile, those companies, the big companies, are turning huge profits. We put them under pressure for the need for a cost of disability payment.
Unfortunately, we had Derek O'Leary in here last week. It looks as though that's going to happen. So,
well, can I say to you, Claire, it ought to have happened by now. I mean, it's an absolute disgrace that in their last budget that they spent 9.4 billion euros, left working people behind and actually left disabled people 1,400 euros per annum worse off. And when those people came out and said very clearly that for many of them, they had to make a choice between heating and eating, Dara Cleary answered them back and said that that wasn't the case, when in fact their lived experience that was. And
But what you want
case.
Is the mini budget, the cost of disability payment, the rent rebate, energy credit.
But look,
I mean, our spending growth in this country is the highest in the EU. We are borrowing to save money. We are reliant on a couple of companies paying corporation tax. Is that not irresponsible?
We are running huge surpluses. The tax take is very, very large. I mean, ahead of profile every time. And that affords for us an opportunity not to waste money and to squander money, but the opportunity and the obligation to invest smartly, especially in infrastructure. And when we present our alternative budget, we'll put a huge emphasis on that, as your listeners would expect, on housing. We want to help do everything we can to help people get their home.
You're calling for recurrent spending, but also, using money that might necessarily be there in a couple of years' time.
No, and we have never ever done that. We have never argued that windfall taxes be used for recurrent spending. Far from it. What we do recognise is that people are really, really struggling, and that there comes a point in the life of every worker and every family that you simply cannot do more with less, as they say. And when you consider there are 300,000 households now in arrears in terms of their electricity bills, that just gives you a slight insight as to where many, many households are at. Others who aren't in arrears are still feeling it, because everything now is just so much more expensive. So our big critique of last year's budget is that it left workers and working people completely behind, really disadvantaged disabled people. And of course, the big infrastructural questions of our time, especially housing.
Okay.
The need for people to get their home still left in a crisis situation. So as we're preparing for the budget, these are the things that we're now doing our work on. We got knocked back on the emergency budget. The government simply said no, they weren't interested. So
they have accused you of trying to stir up protesters and angling for them to get back out onto the streets in relation to fuel, had they not extended into September. Is that what you were doing, or what is your response to that accusation?
No, I don't think when people came out on those protests, that was because they had concluded that their backs were to the wall. They weren't being heard, they weren't being seen, and they had a government that simply did not want to know. Just remember, we had raised this issue consistently, we were blue in the face raising the issue with both Micheál Martin and Simon Harris. We told them this is a real situation where farmers, agricultural contractors,
it's about
others
looking ahead.
We're in trouble.
Week you wanted to get people back out onto the streets again.
Can I tell you, Claire, but I'm making the point, nobody had to get these families and workers out on the street. They came out of their own volition, out of sheer frustration, and as a matter of last resort, responding to a government that will not listen. And I think it's a very poor judgment and a bad look if that same government now, rather than listening carefully, responding to people's lives and their circumstances, is instead looking for a distraction or a suggestion that somehow this is a contrivance of Sinn Féin. It most certainly is not.
You've been subjected to abuse from anti-immigration protesters. They've called you a traitor. Is your party's stance on immigration a problem for your voters, do you think?
I think the failure of government to A, manage the entirety of the migration situation correctly and efficiently. I think their failure to explain, their failure to listen has caused this to be an issue that is more divisive than it should be in Irish society, because this is a great place to live and Irish people are decent and respectful. And I think everybody knows that those who are fleeing persecution and war need to be treated with dignity and decency. People who come here on work permits and who work in critical sectors of our society, likewise. And I think any right-minded person deplores any form of racism, any form of abuse. So for us, we have a policy that strikes, in my mind, the absolutely correct balance that says clearly we need a system that is rules-based, that those rules have to be applied. You need a system that's properly resourced, a system that's human rights compliant and that's based on dignity. And you also have to have a political atmosphere in which these matters can be discussed as matters of public policy.
How do you feel about anti-immigration protesters using the Irish flag to support their Ireland for the Irish mantra?
The tricolour is a flag of entente, of peace between our two great traditions of the Gael and the Planter, the orange and the green. It's a symbol of inclusion, it's a symbol of peace, and it's a symbol of unity. And it should be hung with pride at every opportunity. It should never, ever, ever be misrepresented or misused as a or misunderstood to represent any form of exclusion or hatred.
It is
or
used for that now, though, isn't
it? Well, shame on those who use it for that purpose. That's for them to fundamentally misunderstand the meaning of the Irish tricolour, the history of its origins, and the meaning and the experience of what it is to be Irish. To be really Irish and patriotic is to understand the history of your own country and to understand, maybe above all else, that we haven't finished our own journey to full unity and to full freedom, and to understand that divisive, toxic politics and toxic ideas help no one. That helps no Irish person, man, woman or child.
You mentioned unity there, and your private members bill on Irish unity is coming. The Taoiseach, Simon Harris, has said Irish unity is not owned by Sinn Féin.
He's right in that. Absolutely. I would not wish it to be owned by Sinn Féin or anybody else.
So do you welcome Fine Gael's move then to put this blueprint together?
It's long overdue, but Bulabus, that's Iontach Mai. I'm very, very happy with that. I think it was important, by the way, for the leader of Fine Gael to actually make that move. Mm-hmm. And I think it's now absolutely imperative that Fianna Fáil and its leader follow suit. But more to the point, it is essential now that the Irish government accept and begin the planning that is necessary for these referendums. They are going to happen, Claire.
I never understand this, though, about Sinn Féin. You always say, and in this private members' bill, you put the pressure on the Taoiseach and on the government to come up with the blueprint. Why don't you do that?
We have done a huge amount of work. We've run symposiums and consultations and all across the country. We've done it in the United States of America, in Australia and in Britain. And of course, as a political party, we have to be generating that conversation, generating those ideas. But just remember, it is the Irish state through the Irish government that is a party to the Good Friday Agreement. And only the government in Dublin can actually produce a green paper, the paper that we are seeking, that sets out all of the opportunities, all of the different areas of work that need to happen by way of preparation for the referendum.
So when it comes to the sticky questions, the ones people are really worried about, like the cost, and I saw 54% of people who are opposed to United Ireland are worried about the cost in the Sunday Independent yesterday. It's up to the government to answer those questions, not Sinn Féin.
Well, it's up to the government to produce the green paper, to host the Citizens' Assembly. But then, of course, it's up to all of us to have the honest conversation with people, to explain to people how it is, in fact, affordable, to explain to people that this subvention from Britain, the cost of running the North, that number is often very, very overstated. It's overstated to include things like pensions, defence spending and so on and so forth. It's up to us to explain and set out the numbers of it, that actually this is affordable. And not alone that, Irish Unity offers a massive economic and investment opportunity.
So you think the British government would continue to pay the pensions of the retired workers, even if it was United Ireland?
Well, I think you have plenty of people who live in this jurisdiction, on this island, who draw their pension from Britain. I think the British government would have to honour their obligations in respect of payments that have been made and contributions made to pension
but
funds.
But people want
and
to by know the way, things like, you know, will we have the HSE in Northern Ireland?
But by the way,
will we have the Gardaí?
Just to finish out the point on pensions, post-Brexit, I think the evidence was that, in fact, the British state did honour its obligations in that regard. On the NHS, you're quite correct. We need to talk about what does the health system look like nationally. It's my personal belief that we will only, in fact, get healthcare right, healthcare provision right, on an all-island basis. We have two systems, the NHS underfunded and struggling north of the border, and south of the border, you kind of have a confused public-private mix that in some parts is excellent, but access to it is incredibly difficult.
So it's up to up to Micheál Martin to answer those questions.
No, it's up to the government to provide the forums, officially the democratic forums and processes, using all of the agencies of the state to set out all of the salient facts, to set out all of the challenges, but the opportunities
as
well.
Are they not doing that, though, with the Shared Island project?
No, they're not. They absolutely are not. And as a matter of fact, we actually launched a very detailed paper on all-island healthcare some months back. But no, the government aren't doing that. They are doing some good work through the Shared Island unit, and that is good. All work that aims to build relationships and networks and investment is good work, Claire, don't get me wrong. But it's not enough. And here's the issue. Good government has to be prepared for either jeopardies, challenges and opportunities. And the Irish government and the Irish state has to be prepared for all of the above. This referendum could get called much earlier than the Dublin government might anticipate. And the only question that will be is whether or not we are prepared. The referendums will happen at some point. So the extant question is, will we have good order? Will we have made our preparations or not? And I am for having a prepared, informed, democratic debate at that point.
Mary Lou McDonald, thank you very much for coming in. We'll take a break.
The Claire Byrne Show with Aviva Insurance. Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.